Chapter 5. There on the Sad Height. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Dylan Thomas. Do not go gentle into that good night. Cullen wakes sore, which he expected, and alone, which he didn't. The solitude gives him time to gather his thoughts and try to decide if he regrets what happened last night, what he did, bound hands or no bound hands. It's briefly tempting to pretend it was all out of his control, but as he lies on his back staring at a ceiling that's in no better shape than his own, the only decision he can reach is that he isn't prepared to be a coward. If he decides that he regrets what he did, he still won't pretend it wasn't his choice. It would hardly be the only regret in his life. If he regrets it. When no answer to that question is forthcoming, he pushes himself slowly upright, testing each muscle and joint as he moves. It's no worse than how he's felt after a particularly hard practice, and Maker knows Cassandra has given him worse bruises than what he can see. The marks across his back and the abrasions at his wrists could be hard to explain, but there's little risk of anyone else seeing them. "Morning, Commander," someone says from behind him, and Cullen's heart stops for a moment before taking off as if to make up for lost time. He turns to find Krem sitting in the far corner of the room, hands laced together behind his head and booted feet propped on the chest beside Cullen's clothes. The mercenary looks casual and comfortable, as if finding the commander of the Inquisition's army in the Iron Bull's bed is the least surprising thing he's seen all week. "Good morning," Cullen manages. They just sit and look at each other then. Krem slouched in his chair, and Cullen twisted around to look over his shoulder. It's awkward, to say the least. "You all right, Commander?" Krem asks, when it becomes clear Cullen is at a loss for words. Cullen laughs. He doesn't mean to, it just slips out. He is the very definition of not all right, and Krem has to know that. Even if he doesn't know the exact chain of events that led to this moment. On the other hand, he may be not all right, but he doesn't feel like complete shit, and he got more sleep last night than he normally manages in 3. "I'm alive," he answers Krem at last, which is the best he can do. "Always a good place to be," Krem says, unfolding from his chair with a creak of leather and a jingle of chainmail. "Chief asked me to keep an eye on you. Said he couldn't very well bolt the door from the outside, and that you'd probably prefer someone didn't just wander in." Cullen's mind shies away from that possibility, and everything that would come after. "But he trusted you." The question comes out more confrontational than he meant. "You think any of the Chargers are better at keeping secrets than me?" Krem asks, apparently unoffended. And Cullen has to admit he has a point. "Either way, you're awake and I've got drill, so..." With a casual wave, he's gone. After a moment to brace himself, Cullen hauls his aching body out of bed and across the room to bolt the door. He stands with his hand on the cold metal for a long time, testing the limits of his physical and mental discomfort. Both are less than he expected, and he's not sure how he feels about that. His patience for self-centered introspection is limited, even when he's the one doing it. So eventually he puts on his clothes, taking a little longer than strictly necessary with his sword belt. Blindfolded as he was, he had no way of knowing if it was actually his belt that the Iron Bull used on him. But he finds himself assuming that it was, and just a little bit aroused as the leather runs through his hands. Dressed with his sword on his hip once more, he pauses at the door to gather his composure. Whatever happened here last night, When he leaves this room, he has to be the commander of the Inquisition's army once again. He takes a deep breath and a tight grip on his sword and goes out to face the day, circling the wall with a brisk nod for everyone he passes, as if he didn't just turn his life upside down last night. Fortunately, Marin is well used to his nightly ramblings, even if she doesn't know where they take him, so it raises no eyebrows when he enters his office from the door onto the castle wall rather than down the ladder from his room. By now, she'd probably be more surprised if Don found him in his bed. The day is both tediously mundane and entirely surreal. There are 100 details to occupy him, all variations on problems he's seen a dozen times before. But every time he hooks his thumbs into his belt, it calls up shivering echoes of the previous night. Marin asks him more than once if he's cold, and the third time Cullen catches himself rubbing at a welt on his chest through his shirt, he almost growls. Dorian, of course, gives him a narrow-eyed smirk that says he knows exactly what Cullen was doing last night. Sitting across the chessboard, Cullen ignores him with the ease of long practice. Dorian smirks at the least provocation. If he really did know exactly what Cullen was doing, and with whom, he would be gaping or laughing hysterically, not smirking. That he knows Cullen had sex with someone isn't something to worry about. Dorian has enjoyed baiting him from the first game they played, letting his fingers linger too long when exchanging pieces, leaning in closer than necessary to talk, adding double meaning to every third sentence. Cullen usually blushes and rarely manages to think of a suitably witty reply in time for it to matter. But the teasing doesn't really bother him. He has siblings, after all. Dorian is no match for the cruel inventiveness of a bored 9-year-old, even if this teasing is far more adult than anything Cullen's brother or sisters ever tried. Afternoon practice with Cassandra is normal enough, until he hears the Iron Bull laugh from somewhere among the soldiers who always find an excuse to idle nearby. In his moment of distraction, Cassandra catches him a blow to the head that makes his ears ring, and he leaves the field dazed for more than one reason. At least that allows him to stand by himself for a few minutes, rubbing his head until he feels like he's pulled himself together. Whatever problems Cullen is having don't seem to affect Bull. He gives Cullen the same nod he always does, claps him on the shoulder with the same amount of force, and generally pays no more attention than he's ever paid. Cullen doesn't know why he's surprised, but he's certainly relieved. Not so relieved that he doesn't escape as soon as he can, returning to his room to remove his armor and wash off the sweat and grime from the day. Alone, for the first time since he woke, he touches the welt on his chest, stroking it hard enough to hurt. It's not quite the same as his belt snapping down, but it's close, and he presses on the mark with one hand while he strokes himself with the other, squeezing his cock harder than normal as he remembers Bull's hand. Nightmares wake him 3 times, but he manages to roll over and return to sleep after the first 2. When the 3rd wakes him, it's close enough to dawn that he doesn't resent getting up. 2 nights of real sleep. It's the most he's gotten in a long time, and he's almost cheerful as he descends the ladder to begin his day. It doesn't last, of course. It never does. And it's not anyone's fault, except for maybe his own thinking something would change. He resists the top of the Mage's Tower for 3 days, but his sleep is fragmented, and on the 4th, he gives in. The wind is colder than he remembers, and the fires in the valley more distant. He watches until dawn erases them in a wash of light reflecting off the snow. The old pattern reasserts itself, as he knew it would, and he climbs the tower the next night, and the next. It isn't whispering to him during the day yet, but he knows that will come soon enough. That knowledge doesn't stop him from going back each night. A week or so later, the creak of the ladder is the only warning before he's treated to the Iron Bull's company once more. If it's possible, it's even more awkward this time. Cullen's memories pressing in at the edges of his awareness, while Bull is as comfortable as ever. After a few minutes of stilted conversation, Cullen abandons the pretense. "I told you it wouldn't fix anything," he says, more tired than bitter.
"I didn't say it would,"
Bull says, keeping up with the topic change effortlessly. He's leaning against the wall beside Cullen, who hasn't bothered to move from his seat between the crenellations.
"It makes a pretty good distraction, though."
"What's the point, then? It's a fix I need, not a distraction."
"And brooding is a fix?"
"What do you think I'm brooding on? I keep hoping to find a way to make this all right." Bull is quiet for so long that Cullen finally tears his gaze from the valley to look over at him. The Kunari is watching him thoughtfully.
"This kind of brooding," Bull says, "it feeds on itself after a while. It becomes its own purpose if you let it. It's not fixing anything."
He sighs.
"I would know."
Talvashaw. The word is there between them, unspoken but not unheard, and Cullen realizes for the first time that Bull may be the one person in Skyhold who actually does understand.
"Why did you do it?" Cullen asks, and once again, Bull has no trouble following this new direction in the conversation.
"It was the Inquisitor's decision, not mine."
Cullen gives him a look. "You could have ignored the order. You were the one who sounded the retreat."
"I could have let them die," Bull agrees. "I told myself I was doing it for a good cause, to help the Inquisition and defeat Corypheus, and my boys would have followed my orders. They'd have held that hill until every one of them was dead. Not for a good cause, but for me."
Bull shrugs one shoulder.
"They would give me everything, just because I asked for it. How could I do less?"
He stares out at the valley, and Cullen wonders if he's seeing a Kunari dreadnought explode into twisted metal, hearing the hiss as burning pieces hit the water.
"Do they know what it cost you?" Cullen asks quietly, when he can't stand it anymore.
He wasn't there, and he still doesn't want the pseudo-memory his mind has conjured from the Inquisitor's terse report afterwards.
"Krem might," Bull says. "The others probably don't. But so what? Right is right, even if no one else knows."
He settles on his heels beside Cullen.
"Why did you stop taking lyrium? Tired of being a Templar?"
"I've wanted to be a Templar as long as I can remember,"
Cullen says, turning back to the valley. With his face turned away, he's not sure Bull can hear him, but he can't look at him and say these things. "It was everything to me. It was me. But the Inquisition doesn't need a Templar, and it definitely doesn't need an army commander with a weakness so easy to exploit."
"Right is right,"
Bull says again, and Cullen nods.
"Does it get easier to live with?"
"Some days," Bull says.
Cullen smiles at the darkness below. Grateful Bull doesn't try to hand him a pretty lie.
"How do you get through the other days?"
"One at a time,"
Bull sighs.
"And by not making important decisions after dark."
"Like allowing a Ben Hasreth spy to tie you up and fuck you."
Bull laughs.
"I said important decisions."
Other than his decision to stop taking lyrium, having sex with the Iron Bull might count as the most important personal decision Cullen has made in years. Of course, that's not saying much, as he's worked hard to avoid the kind of entanglements that require personal decisions, for fear the results might touch more than his own life. Even the lyrium was as much strategic as personal.
"No important decisions after dark," Cullen repeats. "Does it work?"
"So far."
Bull's touch on Cullen's head is light, but so startling it makes Cullen turn to face him once again.
"You were a Templar and a soldier. You know how to follow orders, even if you don't understand them. So here's an order and a promise. This tower? Off limits to you after dark. Find me, find someone, but you don't come up here alone when the sun's down.
Cullen suspected that Bull knew the reason for his trips to the top of this tower, but it's still a shock to have it pulled out into the open. Off balance, he snaps back,
You don't give me my orders.
Oh, really? Bull says, and somehow, the tone of voice recalls the other night. Cullen hears him in memory.
If you stay, you do what I say.
Cullen swallows and asks in a tight voice, Stay off the tower after dark. What part of that was a promise?
That was the order. This is the promise. If you come to me in daylight and tell me you're done, I'll help you end it. No questions, no trying to talk you out of it.
It takes him a moment to understand the words, and when he does, a strange mix of terror and relief rushes through him. Before he remembers, Cassandra made me a promise like that.
Not really. She promised she'd make sure you weren't commanding the Inquisition's army, if she thought you couldn't do the job anymore. This has nothing to do with the army. This is between you and me. I promised to take care of my chargers, and I have, even when it made me Talvashoth. You think I won't keep this promise too?
It's impossible that anyone could make such a promise and mean it. But the world has seen a lot of impossible things lately. Still, Cullen asks skeptically,
That's it. Just tell you I'm done. In daylight, and you stay off this tower in the meantime.
Cullen tries to pin down his thoughts into something coherent, without success. Too many fragments of too many things crowd his head. After a few minutes of silence, he gives up on finding the right words and heads for the ladder. Bull follows him down, just as silent. In Bull's room, he strips down without being told, folds his clothes neatly because he can't not do it. But not stalling, not this time. He ends up bent over the small table, arms stretched over his head and feet apart, tied so he can only move a few inches in any direction. Short of throwing himself sideways and trying to break the table, he's not going anywhere. He tugs at the bindings when Bull is finished tying them, and the tight, burning feeling in his chest eases when he can't slip free or loosen them. His belt again at first, marking his back and his ass and his legs until he's thrusting against the edge of the table, the only part his cock can reach. Bull even manages to get the insides of his thighs, and those marks are still burning when he feels Bull's fingers inside him. Bull's cock replaces his fingers soon enough, and there's no pause for Cullen to adjust, not this time. Bull fucks him in hard, deep thrusts, grinding his hips down into the table until the dull ache of bruises from the table's edge joins the sharper pain from the lash marks. When Bull is finished, he unties Cullen and sucks him off, three fingers up his ass, curling and sliding in the wetness beginning to run down his thighs. Cullen is actually a little surprised when Bull goes to his knees, but he has to admit, in those brief seconds before all thought disappears, that there's nothing in the least bit submissive about Bull's posture. Whatever their positions, inside this room, Bull owns him, and they both know it. Afterward, he has just enough energy to stagger to the bed and fall into it. He's asleep before Bull's weight hits the mattress beside him. Cullen wakes just before dawn, heart pounding from a nightmare he doesn't remember but can guess at, especially as his cock is hard, a few drops of liquid already beating at the slit. He wonders briefly which is more impolite, stroking himself off in Bull's bed or waking Bull up just to solve a problem he's perfectly capable of solving himself. He's still laughing silently at himself for even thinking about such a question when hands take hold of his hips and lift him up to straddle Bull's thighs, and suddenly, problem is no longer the right word. Bull takes both their cocks in one hand, his own still soft but stiffening with every passing second. Cullen is mesmerized by the motion of that hand, by by the sight of his cock straining against Bull's. He looks up to find Bull watching him with a sleepy smile and a half-lidded eye, and Cullen leans down to kiss him before he can think about it too much. As Bull's mouth opens under his, Cullen realizes with a jolt this is only the second time they've kissed. It's entirely different. No soft and careful touches this time. Instead, Bull's tongue thrusts against his, and Cullen's release washes over him before he knows what's happening. Bull continues to stroke for a few more seconds. Then his eye closes and he gasps against Cullen's mouth. Wet heat pulls another involuntary thrust out of Cullen, but he's too spent for more than that. He dozes after that, a light sleep that's broken the moment Bull tries to move out from under him. With the gray light of dawn creeping in around the doors, there's no point going back to sleep, even assuming he somehow could, and so he climbs stiffly out of bed. The awkwardness he was expecting last time isn't actually as bad as he'd feared it would be. It's much like being a recruit again, moving around a new bunkmate, neither of them familiar enough with the other's routine to stay out of the way. At least he's old enough now, accustomed to the length of his arms and legs, that he doesn't trip over his own feet when he has to duck sideways to avoid Bull's sword as the kunari straps it across his back. He's smiling, for no reason he can define, as he settles his own sword at his hip.